Thank you. Well, we are currently in a series called Church for the City, and the two guest speakers that are coming next Sunday and Sunday after, they will continue to speak on the same theme. Pastor David will talk about being the salt and light, and Pastor Sharon will talk about serving the least of these among us. Well, today's passage comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 58, verse 6 through 12. And the title is Repairer of Broken Walls. Let me read that for us. Is not this the kind of fasting I've chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter when you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry, and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land, and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. We believe in holy, universal, or Catholic, and apostolic church. Apostolic means sent church. The church is sent by Jesus Christ into the world, into our society, into our neighborhoods. Jesus said in John 17, "As you sent me into the world, I have sent them into the world." When we look at the ministry of Jesus, he was sent to bring the good news to the poor, according to Isaiah, to proclaim the release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. We are sent into the world with the same mission. God did not intend the church to be an ingrown, self-centered community. Rather, the church is sent to share the good news and God's love with the people in our neighborhood. So if we love our neighbors, we should be concerned about their total welfare. The welfare, the well-being of their souls, their minds, their bodies, and their surroundings, their community. Today's passage reveals God's heart. God, of course, enjoys the worship and prayer of his people, but if we are not caring for the poor and the powerless, then we are not really worshiping God. The Bible shows that God cares about cities, because that's where most people live. Our world is becoming more and more urban. More and more people are living in cities all around the world. God cares about the shalom, or the welfare, the wholeness of the city. God told the Jewish exiles in Babylon that they are to seek the welfare of Babylon, the evil city. God told Jonah that God cares about the people and the animals living in the city of Nineveh. Although it's an evil city, it was the largest city in the world at the time. Now, do you know what is the largest city today? What is the largest city in the world today? Anybody know the largest city in the world? Guesses? Anybody? Maybe New York City? You know? And Tokyo, Mexico City is the largest city in the world. Mexico City. And How many of you have ever prayed for Mexico City, the largest city in the world? Not many Christians. Not many Christians are concerned about the largest city in the world. Just as people in Jonah's day, of course, Jonah was not really concerned about Nineveh, the largest city in the world. God cares about the urban renewal and rebuilding of cities as livable spaces. God cares about health, education, transport, justice, clothing, and housing in the cities where many people live. But in the past two or three decades, many churches, both evangelical and mainline churches, have moved away from cities and settled in the rich suburban neighborhoods. And because many churches are now located in the suburbs, many churches have neglected urban ministry. Churches would rather send their missionaries to faraway countries in Africa rather than sending someone to inner cities in the U.S. The kind of fasting God has chosen affect the whole city. Freedom from economic oppression, providing food for the hungry, clothes for the naked, housing for the homeless. It is building shalom in broken neighborhoods in our cities. Now, we worship God on Sunday, on the Lord's Day, but we continue to worship God in our daily life, Monday through Saturday. And we worship God as we minister to the needs of this world. God called his people to mend broken relationships, to mend broken systems, to rebuild trust, to rebuild communities, and transform ghettos into streets with decent houses. God called his people as repairer of broken walls, as restorer of streets with dwellings. Now, last Sunday, I shared with you what each household can do for the neighbor, for the neighborhood. And today I want to share what a church can do for the church's neighborhood. As a church, how have we tried to live out the fasting that is acceptable to God? Where can we be repairers of broken walls? How can we be restorers of streets? Well, this would look different for a suburban church. You know, I think right now we are a suburban church. Clearly, there are more needs and problems in large cities than in rich suburbs. And it's hard to serve the people in the inner cities just because suburban church is not in the city. And I've seen a church in Almaden Valley where the church decided to move into downtown San Jose just to serve the needs of the people in downtown. But most suburban churches are not willing to make that kind of a drastic move, and some churches just cannot make that kind of move. So how can a suburban church serve the people in the city? For us, in our case, it's you know, San Jose, the 10th largest city in the U.S. When I went to the conference in Regent College, I asked this question to one of the panelists. The speaker said that he could think of two ways. The first one is the harder way, and that is for the church to adapt a particular neighborhood in the city and send their leaders once a week and just to talk to the people in that neighborhood, to the business owners, to the people who live there, and just ask some questions. So how long have you lived in this neighborhood, or how long have you worked in this neighborhood? What are some things you like about this neighborhood? What are some things you dislike about this neighborhood? And as the leaders are talking to the people in that particular place, they get a sense of what the needs of that community may be. But that is really hard, you know, because he recommends doing that for like 6 months. It takes time. It's just, you know, a lot of effort and time. But he says there is a much easier way, and that is for a suburban church to partner with an urban church that is already in the city. The urban church in that neighborhood has been there for decades, and they know the neighborhood. They know its needs. And they are already doing ministries to serve the needs of that community. So a suburban church can partner with an urban church and work together for that particular neighborhood. Right now, our church is waiting for a building, a church building from the presbytery. If we do not get a building in the city of San Jose, then we would have to rent another building. And most likely, you know, that would be probably in the suburbs. And we can continue to be a suburban church that partners with an urban church and work for a particular neighborhood. And if God allows us a building within the city, then we can really be a church for the neighborhood. One of the panelists said that the urban church should look at a map and see, north, 5 blocks north, 5 blocks west and east and south, and sort of consider those, area within the 5 blocks around the church as the church's neighborhood. So the church is adapting that particular region as its neighborhood. And then the church can think of ways to serve the neighborhood. The main speaker of that conference was a pastor named Ray Baca, and he is a regular speaker at the Urbana Mission Conference. He is one of the pioneers of urban ministry in North America, and he is also a scholar, a professor, and he has worked in other large Asian cities like Hong Kong. So he has many decades of urban ministry experience. And the theme of that conference was seeking the peace of the city. You know, the reason why I went to the conference was because the theme is same as our theme for this year, just to learn more things, how to reach out to the community. And one of the things that I learned from Ray Baca is the importance of networking. Pastor Ray believed that God was already at work in that particular neighborhood. And the churches in that neighborhood was doing ministry there for decades. So he wanted to learn from them how to evangelize and how to serve that neighborhood. So the first thing he did was, you know, when he became a pastor of that of a region in downtown Chicago, near downtown Chicago, he visited all the churches in that neighborhood. And he didn't care about the denomination. He visited all denominations. He even visited churches that do not worship in English. So he visited even the immigrant churches. And whenever he met a leader or pastor of that church, he said, "Hi, my name is Ray Baca. I'm a new pastor at Fairfield Baptist Church. And I'm new to the community. I don't know much about it. Could you share with me some things you've learned about being a pastor or being a church leader in this neighborhood?" So, you know, he would approach someone with an humble attitude of learning. And, of course, there are few pastors who viewed, you know, Pastor Ray with suspicion as like a competitor, and they really didn't welcome him. They were like, they weren't willing to work with him to serve the neighborhood. And unfortunately, one of them was a Presbyterian pastor. But there were pastors who welcomed Ray and who were more than willing to work with him to serve the community. And few of them became very close friends of Ray Baca. He visited a Catholic church, and from the Catholic church, he learned that the Catholic church, they do so much more than the Protestant churches in trying to meet the needs of the community. And they were very well organized. They have many, many resources and experiences. And when he visited a Lutheran church, the Lutheran pastor took him to the local police station, and he introduced this new pastor to the police, you know, staff. And he said, "Hey, this is, you know, Pastor Ray and his news, you know, treat him well." So he introduced them to the local police station. And he had other pastors share about what they learned by pastoring in that neighborhood. And he himself learned so much from talking to the pastors and leaders of the church in that neighborhood. And to this day, he recommends pastors to build a network with other churches, because one church cannot possibly serve the needs of the entire neighborhood. And working with other pastors fostered an atmosphere of solidarity and cooperation rather than competition. His second round of visits was to the public and voluntary agencies that are working for the community. So Pastor Ray visited the welfare programs, the agencies, public schools, a hospital, the court, the city council. He also visited some private social service organizations, legal aids, shelters. And so if a school is being vandalized, that's not just a problem for the school, but a problem for the entire community. So before spending church money for the community, Ray recommends seeing the big picture. God's gifts include public and private agencies that care and serve the community. Churches can help create remedial services where they do not exist and can support them where they do. For instance, and the church can also develop new ministries or another service for the community according to the congregation's gifts and abilities. An example is at my former church in Michigan, there were many, many medical doctors. So the English name was KPCMD, Korean Presbyterian Church of Metro Detroit, but then people referred it as KPC of MDs, as in medical doctors, because there were so many medical doctors in the church. So just because of that makeup, obvious ministry for that church was healthcare. So they would send medical missions overseas. And when the Mexican migrant workers came to Michigan to work on the farms, they would send a medical team to provide free healthcare for the migrant workers. And on Sunday, they run a free clinic for all the members of the church and anyone who comes with a member. So if you go there with a member, then you can get a free, you can be seen by a doctor and a nurse for free. And at our church, we have many engineers, and we have people who are very talented in music. So maybe that's those two areas might be something that we could use to serve the community. And we have many college students and young adults, able bodies. That means that we could do a great vacation Bible school or a sports camp for the community. So what are some of the gifts that we have to offer to the community? Pastor Ray's last round of visits was to businesses of all kinds. Shops, news agents, garages, factories, and even bars. Yes, bars. He visited local bars because they are the center of community fellowship. People pour out their hearts over drinks. And when he met with the shopkeepers, he asked questions about the neighborhood, and he got to learn about the neighbor's history and things that he didn't know. And he also learned how people viewed the church members. And here are some terrible things and some wonderful things about his congregation. And the view of the neighbors regarding his church was very different from the view that the church had of itself. And Pastor Ray knew another Baptist pastor who also did that kind of neighboring network. And when that pastor visited a bar, the bar owner sort of complained to the pastor of customers who would get drunk and they would be slobbering all over the bar. And he was kind of complaining about those people. And the church and the pastor, he went back to his church and thought about it. And then he talked to a few members and he went back to the bar and said to the bar owner, I think some of our members can come here on certain evenings and just become people who will listen to those troubled customers. So the bar owner, these people had a jacket with a logo, and they're the caring people in that bar. So whenever a person would get drunk and talk and just kind of pour out their hearts, and they would, the bar owner would go to, oh, we have these two people who are willing to listen to you. And they would come over and they would just listen and talk to that troubled person for hours. And in that 1 year, they got more baptism from that tavern than any other evangelistic missions. I've heard of one church that decided to buy all the church supplies and all the church food from the local stores, not from the big national chains, although the local stores were expensive, because the leadership said, if you want to serve the community, we should serve the local business as well. We should intentionally buy everything from the local stores. And they did that for a few years, and after a few years, they built a relationship with these business owners, and once in a while, the business owners, you know, would offer discounts to church events, and they would become sponsors to community projects. So they built a relationship with that intentional focus. When I was serving the church in Michigan, I had to go downtown Detroit. You know, Detroit is, man, if you go downtown, it's kind of scary. It's not a pretty sight. Many houses are just empty. They're worn out. It's horrible. But I had to go downtown to a seminary where I had to learn clinical pastoral education. So I had to be there once a week. And there was, right next to the seminary, a block down the seminary, there was a very nice grocery. I mean, like, that was like the best place, you know, in that poor neighborhood, most appealing place. It had great sandwich, great food, lots of stuff, you know, neat stuff that you can buy that you cannot really buy in a regular, you know, Safeway or Kroger, the large market, whatever. So, you know, I whenever I went there, I would just go there and, you know, grab my lunch there. You know, I really liked that place. But then after about a year, I went back to the neighborhood, and then I realized the grocery was gone. Like, they closed and they moved somewhere else. I was like, I was so disappointed, because like that was like the only place appealing in that poor neighborhood. And I realized how businesses could be so, you know, they could be, you know, they're important for the health and vitality of urban communities. A pastor raised church in Chicago, Fairfield Baptist Church. They did several things for the community. One of them was a class on building maintenance. The church was really old and it was decrepit. It was, you know, in horrible condition. So instead of hiring another, the church was growing. So instead of hiring another part-time pastor, what they decided was to hire a part-time construction expert. And instead of, you know, this guy named Dave, instead of working on the church building by himself, he taught other people in that community how to do roofing, how to do plumbing, how to do plastering, boiler work, and rewiring. So he, you know, taught that as like a class. And as he were teaching, he also shared his personal faith in Jesus Christ. So he used, you know, he didn't do the work himself. He taught others to work on the church. And the church also got other experts to teach other classes on other building trades that people in that community can come and learn. They were learning these job-related skills. So the old building turned out to be sort of an opportunity to serve that neighborhood. Another thing they did was to have a monthly celebration. The neighborhood was not a good one, was not a safe neighborhood. You could hear gunshots at night, and you could also, once in a while, witness some gang activities. So in that poor, violent neighborhood, there wasn't much to celebrate. So the church began to celebrate the fact that the members had gotten through another month. And they invited people who serve that community, so that they would invite school teachers or policemen or social workers or factory owners, even local bar owners, to church, and they would just say, hey, we'd like to have you as our honored guests in our monthly celebration, just to thank you for your work in our community. And that was another way for the church to build bridges, to build relationships with that community. And trying to be a church for the city can take the church to a place where it didn't really want to go. For instance, Ray and other pastors, they were not really interested in, you know, doing social justice or, you know, getting involved in political action, but getting getting to know the members and getting involved in their lives eventually led them to some form of political and social justice actions. As Pastor Ray got to know the members, he began to see their struggles. So many of the things the poor people needed in that neighborhood were in the hands of the city or the state or the federal legislatures. And it was not enough just to stand under the cliff and catch people as they fell. He felt that he had to go to the top just to see who was pushing them over the cliff. So Ray went to the court many times with members and the families of the church, and he and other pastors also listened to many cases where the poor were not given fair decisions by the judge. And a neighboring pastor who worked with Pastor Ray, as he listened to many cases, he got so fed up. He got so frustrated and angry. During the case, he just stood up and he said to the judge, "Your Honor, if it pleases the court, I've been listening to these decisions and I must ask you, where is the justice?" And the judge, you know, probably took off his glass and looked at him and said, "Justice? This is not a court of justice, but a court of law. If you want to bring justice, change the law." So that was the moment when the pastors decided that they should get involved in some form of political action, because the laws were not written by the poor in the city. They were written by the rich and the powerful who lived in the suburbs, who didn't care much about the conditions of the inner cities. And they believed that the powerlessness of a community was a pastoral issue. At first, Pastor Ray was attracted to Saul Alinsky's method of community action, which was radical and confrontational. But he saw that it was too adversarial and it gradually tore up neighborhoods. So he tried to make changes through personal contacts with the powerful, with the people and the city council, with the landlords and other powerful people. But Ray was not all about social justice. He believed that Christians cannot work in poor urban areas without offering the good news of Jesus Christ. If we do all kinds of things for the poor and have failed to offer the good news, he believed that we have failed to offer the best gift. So he always encouraged his members to share the good news in several networks of relationships. The first network is your family and your relatives. The second network is your next door neighbors. So, you know, he encouraged them to have, like, you know, build relationships with the people that live next door. And the third network is your recreational life. You know, in the city, it can take many forms. Some of them knew members in the gang, so it was like just hanging out with the gang members, playing sports, playing video games, gathering to play, I don't know, basketball, or gathering at a coffee shop or a bar. So it's the people whom you hang out with on Friday nights. That's your recreational circle. And the fourth network is your workplace. And as the Fairfield Church served and witnessed, the church kept growing and it began to have a positive impact upon the neighborhood. We are hoping that we can move to a building in the city of San Jose, and that, you know, neighborhood is not as, like, you know, violent or poor as Pastor Ray's church in Chicago, but there would be many opportunities for us to serve that neighborhood. God called us to bring wholeness, shalom, to the neighborhoods in our cities. If you proclaim the good news to the poor, share our food with the hungry, and provide the poor with shelter and clothe the naked, then God promises these wonderful blessings. Your light will break forth like the dawn. Your healing will quickly appear. Your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will follow you. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. You will rebuild the ancient ruins and raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. When a network of church works with different agencies and people to build up the neighborhood, then God will bring security, flourishing to that neighborhood. Broken relationships, broken systems will be mended. City neighborhoods will be like well-watered gardens. And God will bring honor to his people and to his own name. Let's spend some time thinking about what our church can offer to the neighborhood. And let's just pray a blessing for the neighborhood that we as a church can serve. Hopefully, it'll be a neighborhood within the city of San Jose.